All right, so welcome everyone to our regular scheduled meeting. It's Monday, January 27th, just at 7 o'clock. I'd ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Bachner.
Here.
Trustee Gillis.
Here.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Brennan.
Here.
Trustee Johnson. Trustee O'Connell.
Here.
President Adusi.
Here. Okay, if I can ask you all please to stand so we could say the Pledge of Allegiance together.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Hey, Ken. All right. Okay. All right. Hi, Ken. Sorry, we just started. So, Ken.
Johnson.
No worries. Glad you can make it. Okay. We have three citizens' comments. They're all related to item 7 AI. So, we'll wait until we get to that point and we can discuss that. We bring in the public comments. So, all right. We're elected official comments and announcements. I'd ask Trustee O'Connell to start.
I have nothing this evening.
Okay. Sorry, Ken.
I have nothing.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I have nothing this evening.
Okay.
I have nothing this evening.
Great.
Rest Jess, good evening. And then I have no further comments.
Yeah, good. Yes, Lisa?
I have something to say. So I'll thank you. I just wanted to say thank you to JT Strategic Communications for laying the foundation for our new community dialogue process. The $20,000 fee, in my opinion, was well spent in the establishment of a robust, repeatable process for ongoing community engagement that can be easily enacted by village staff ongoing. The aha moment for me personally was highlighting the difference between community communication and community engagement. We do a lot of the former and need to do more of the latter. With that in mind, I encourage residents from across the village to raise their hand to host one of the future community dialogues now being planned for 2025. I also want to congratulate Rick Jaskulaka. I probably massacred his name, so I apologize in advance. One of the owners of JT Strategic Communications on his 49 years of work with former President Jimmy Carter. What a legacy. While historians have mixed reviews about Jimmy Carter's presidency, all have to agree that Jimmy Carter was a great man. May he rest in peace. In closing, I really just want to say it's really, truly amazing how generous our Forest residents are with their time and talent. These gifts are unique to our village. Thank you, and we are truly blessed.
Okay, thank you. Erica?
I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. And we remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. I also do want to acknowledge that today is International Holocaust Remembrance Day. It was 79 years ago today that Auschwitz was relieved from Nazi control. And of the messages that I saw today, particularly at this point of history, much of what I saw was a call to action against hate and racism in all forms, locally and globally. And I think that that is something that is important for us to keep in mind around this table, respecting everyone, unity, diversity, and cultivating an environment that celebrates all identities, regardless of race or religion. I also want to check in with the groups of discussions that we have called casual conversations, and maybe offer up considering how the interest that village trustees have had in it, that it maybe be redesignated as like the village board casual conversations, I think that having us connected to the community in the same ways that Lisa was just describing and showing our engagement with them is really important and something I look forward to. That's it.
All right. Thank you. I have nothing to report. So I'm going to go ahead and ask, we move and second the consent agenda.
Make a motion to approve the consent agenda items A through E.
Second.
Okay. Is there any comments or questions regarding these items? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to read out the items and then take the vote.
Consent agenda item A, Village Board of Trustee meeting minutes, December 16th, 2024. B, Village Board of Trustee meeting minutes, January 13th, 2025. C, Village Board of Trustee executive session meeting minutes, January 13th, 2025. D, Administration Department report. E, authorization to sell surplus property, Fire Department 2016 Dodge Charger Ordinance. Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Okay, very good. And item seven, so before we begin, ask the board to table this issue, this item that's before us, given that Ms. Chikander submitted an ethics complaint to our ethics committee. We take these complaints extremely seriously. And so the committee will be forming a meeting this Friday and has asked for some documentations and things that they could read and look at to discern and, of course, reply to the complaint in a, hopefully in a very professional manner. So so at this point in time, we'll table this until the next meeting, which is February 10th. Chair Daly made it sound like they could have this discussion and deliberation within a week. So a report back to the Village Board and I. So I look forward to seeing that report. So right now we'll ask the board to table this, but I will also ask Matt Walsh because he was prepared to do it, so we might as well do it. And that is to talk about the process that the EDC went through, specifically the village administrator and the assistant village administrator in light of, you know, that process. So, for that, right now, no vote tonight, but will hopefully appear on the February 10th agenda item.
Can I ask before Matt starts how this works? Because I didn't know about the tabling, and I don't know what the process is. Do we then, after you present or while you're presenting, are we able to ask questions and then discuss the matter? It's just all we're doing is not voting. Is that how it goes?
Yes.
President, I'm sorry. I think what the village president was suggesting is that in light of the complaint that was filed, that it would be recommended for the board to table it. So right. At the end of it, whatever discussion there can be, there would need to be a motion to table it. Yep. The suggestion is to February 10th, yep, as opposed to generally. And then if that motion passes, that's what it would do.
Okay. And so tabling would mean postponing the vote, but we could still discuss the matter.
Yes.
Yes.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yes.
And
you're welcome.
You need a motion to do that.
Yeah, we need a motion to table.
Yeah,
motion to table 7AI.
Second.
Okay. To February 10th.
Correct. February 10th.
Okay. Very good. So now, thank you, Katie, for making that clarification. So we'll go ahead and ask Administrator Walsh to kind of go through your presentation.
Are we still going to hear from the residents on
oh,
this topic?
If you may, you can. I mean, I'm sorry. Thank you. I'm happy. I didn't mean to do that.
No, because I think this will be the discussion about this motion. Okay. I think that's what was suggested.
Okay. Right. So I'm sorry. Would Karen Neal, would you like to speak tonight or when it comes back to the board? It's up to you. Or Ed? Yeah, please feel free to. This is. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. So I'm here on behalf of my wife, Karen Neal,
okay,
who sent an email to, I think, board members.
Yep.
She couldn't be here because I think she has her own board meeting today. but she asked me that I could read her email for the records. But if you're going to have that discussion on February 10, I'm not sure. Maybe she can be here and do it herself. It's up to
It's actually up to you. But if you want, if she's available on the 10th, I'd ask her to come back and might be more germane.
Okay. Yeah. In that case, she would be speaking her own words.
Okay. Very good. Thank you so much. Ed? Okay. Very good. Margie? Okay. Very good. All right, so that concludes that. We're just going to. He's going to do the.
To vote on it.
Yeah, we moved second. But
right,
we
do you
want to
vote that right now?
Well,
so
that's
we
right.
Can. I don't okay. care. I was going to wait till.
There can. I think the idea was there would be discussion about what the.
But don't we have to vote on the motion to table?
Table it.
Is the question.
No, I mean, ultimately. Yes.
Ultimately, but we were going to get mad.
Discussion about it, which I think was suggested.
Like we do it all the time.
I did the motion, and then we would discuss the topic.
Just like we do all the time.
Yeah. Right. No worries. Go ahead, Matt. Thank you. Like we just all started. No, we're going to discuss.
All right. Good evening, Village Board. It's easier for me to see the screen from up here. So,
yeah.
Last week, Trustee O'Connell had requested that I prepare a presentation to kind of explain the process for the broker services procurement in advance of Village Board consideration. Obviously, there won't be a vote tonight, but I think it's still useful for the Village Board and residents to understand the steps that have been taken thus far for this project. So way back in last spring, the village posted a request for proposals, RFP for short. That is a document that the village shares and seeks out consultants or qualified firms to submit their own proposals for to do the work that's spelled out in the RFP. The RFP is part of the packet, spells out what the expected scope of work is and the evaluation criteria and the general rules for submitting the items. It's a pretty common process. A lot of our engineering projects are done by RFP. It's slightly different than kind of our call for bid process that is for construction projects that's doing a specific work. This is because it's professional services, there's a little bit more flexibility or latitude from the firms that would submit achieve the scope of work that the village is seeking. Now, the reason for even posting an RFP in the first place for broker services is it's our intent to cast as wide a net as possible for developers that are interested in the village-owned properties on Madison Street. The village has passively marketed the site for several years now, with signs on LCFS building prior to its demolition, a sign on the vacant site currently, and then also some online listings trying to generate interest from developers. And there has been some limited interest over the past at least few years that I've been with the village. However, we think this is such a valuable asset for the village. We want to get it right, and we want to have as many qualified developers as possible interested in the property so that the village board can determine what the best fit is for the property.
I'm looking through the slide, and as you're talking about it, the request for proposals, it says it was posted on our village website. You also mentioned that you posted on online listings. Do you have examples of listings?
Sure. So the listing that I referenced, we actually posted the property on an online listing through LoopNet. Was the online the website that currently has a listing for the Madison Street property. So that's not where the RFP was listed. RFP was just on our village website, and there's a lot of websites kind of aggregate RFPs and we'll request them and it kind of disseminated that way.
Do you have a sense of which websites would aggravate and like where you saw maybe our RFP listing?
I can't remember off the top of my head for this particular case.
I know some municipalities use a service called Bonfire that's pretty popular. Is that something that we've used in the past or used for this?
No, I don't think so. I don't recognize the name. Bonfire?
Yeah.
One of the aggregates that uses Lupin has CoStar, so those are two pretty respected. CoStar. Right. So they're the same setup.
CoStar, again, being for properties more so than
RFPs. More than RFP, sure. Yeah. So the deadline for the RFPs was May 22nd, 2024. The village received 5 proposals, and the firms are listed here, and they're also in the village in the village board packet.
I'm sorry, I have another question.
Sure.
I forgot. In our packet, it says responses were due April 15th, and then it was adjusted to May 22nd. Was there a reason for the adjustment?
One of the firms had asked for an extension, and we wanted to get as many as possible. Actually, the proposals were received in the order that's listed there. But yes, we wanted, again, kind of trying to cast a wide net, have as many options as possible. We wanted to provide a little bit more opportunity for firms to submit. And then I touch on a little bit, the RFP, as with any time that we will put out a request for proposals, we spell out evaluation criteria, things that are expected of the firms that submit. Generally, their demonstrated history of doing similar projects, what their qualifications are, any references for similar projects and things like that. And that's the framework that the village will use while looking at the proposals. It's different than the kind of call for bid where it's just strictly price. This is professional service, we want the best product or the best work. So that's why we have this evaluation criteria out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was posted as part of the RFP on the village website. So I think the key part here or the key question is about the evaluation process that went into the work. Jessica Spencer, the assistant village administrator, is kind of the staff liaison for the economic development committee and manage this process. She's on Zoom if there's any questions that I can't answer. Once the 5 proposals were received at an economic development commission meeting, Jessica asked for volunteers for 2 members from the EDC to evaluate the document proposals. Along with Jessica. So that would be the first round of review, just going through the documents to see what the qualifications were and just that initial reaction before deciding who we would go to interview. And it's a pretty typical process for the RFP. A lot of times it's just staff driven, for example, for the electric vehicle charging project, we had a consultant come through, staff performed the interviews of the 3 members. Because this had some interest from Economic Development Commission members, they wanted to involve certain members of that group. And the reason that it was not the Economic Development Commission as a whole is these interviews are just that, they're interviews. So the folks will be sharing their strategies and information with the board. And we try to avoid kind of exposing those kinds of firms to meetings where other firms or other residents would be able to kind of see. We want to keep everyone separate. So the reason for having this kind of smaller review team was to kind of expedite the process, but also allow for a better interview product. Any consultant that we haven't had a committee review them in a public meeting, in the interview process. I can't think of any example that that's happened. There's been It's either staff or sometimes there's been certain members of committees, like, for example, the consultants for the diversity, equity, and inclusion process. That was the co-chairs of the committee and I believe one other staff member that performed the interviews and kind of evaluate on that process before bringing a recommendation from that review team to the larger group and eventually to the village board. Very similar process that was used here.
Just a quick question.
Yep.
Were the individuals that weren't selected in round two for an interview?
I meant companies.
Yeah.
Yes, I believe they were. Jessica, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, but I'm sorry, I couldn't hear Trustee Johnson's question.
I'm sorry.
The question was, were the two firms that were not selected for the interview process notified?
Yes, they were.
Okay.
Thank you.
And the three firms that were selected by members Lowe's and Brangle and Jessica were JLL, At Properties, and SVN. So those three were identified for kind of a round two where there would actually be an interview done by Chairman Kyler Brown, member Tim Brangle, Jessica Spencer, and myself was the interview team for this round two.
Matt, was there only one set of actual interviews just in round two, not in round one?
Correct. Round one was just a review of the documents and the proposals that were submitted.
Got it. Thanks.
And really the reason for the three firms were kind of much larger entities with a lot more experience, and we felt that we wanted a firm that can kind of reach a lot of folks, and we felt that they would be better qualified than the other two that were not selected for the interviews. So that was the general sense for that. So the four of us completed the interviews of the three firms, and we all strongly felt that JLL was the best option for the village to hire. There were a number of reasons. I think JLL had a lot more understanding that this project is not a traditional broker arrangement where we're trying to get the most money possible. Obviously, the village wants to, get money for the property that it's selling. But I think what's more important is to have a development that fits in with the community and provides some of the things that we talked about 2 weeks ago. Providing an asset to the community, somewhere where people can use, and also and the priority being meeting our comprehensive plan, providing an asset to the village rather than just the highest selling price. And the JLL also exhibited or demonstrated kind of a more sound understanding of our zoning process and comprehensive plan. Tom Kirschbraun, the principal with JLL, has urban planning background, and he was very familiar with the entitlement process and trying to get us through to a place where we would actually have a project that would be a success at the Madison Street site. And they have recent experience in marketing the Priory space. They were also involved in the Mars campus redevelopment, and also done work with a couple of different commercial shopping districts where they had to be creative about recreating those spaces. It's not just a retail focus, but trying to think of a master plan to come around some things that I think are applicable to what Madison Street process will be.
Were they also involved in the marketing of Lake and Lathrop through Wintrust before it was stopped?
Correct. Yes. Thank you for mentioning that. So, yes, the court appointed receiver, Ascend Real Estate Group, back in late 2023 was appointed, and they hired JLL to market the site for redevelopment. That was when the court had granted the ability for the receiver to market the site. Eventually, the courts, the judge, revoked that authority. So there was no sale has taken place at this point. But JLL was the broker for during that period.
And Matt, they're not historically developers, right?
I'm sorry, what?
They're not historically developers, right?
Correct.
What do you mean JLL is not historically developers?
So they would not be someone who would come in, buy the property and build whatever, you know, is going to be built there. So they're just really, they're brokerage services.
You mean for this part of JLL?
Just in general, JLL does not do development.
Yeah, I think it's important to keep that separate from what the development is. I think we've heard a lot of questions and things about the process, and I think that's an important role here. So the only deliberation for selecting JLL took place with the four folks on that round two, Chairman Kyler Brown, Member Tim Brangle, Jessica Spencer, and myself. The rest of the Economic Development Commission did not discuss or deliberate or interview the proposals. Once that decision was made, staff kind of started the early stages of negotiating the contract with JLL and kind of discussing what the terms and what the fee structure might be for some of the other things that we were expecting from JLL. There were some conversation in our interview that JLL would be kind of more of a almost an advisor to the village in helping navigate this process. And we, at the interview and shortly after that, we were asking if that work would be part of their commission fee or if they had an expectation for other types of fee structure. So we were kind of worked through those questions, and they eventually determined that the commission fee would cover their work, any work associated with this. And earlier this month, we asked JLL to come present to the Economic Development Commission. They did a brief presentation where they kind of shared what their marketing strategy was, and the Economic Development Commission voted 4-0 to recommend with one abstention. When a member of the EDC, Walter Walfelt, works for JLL. And we had been very conscious throughout the process to separate Mr. Walfelt's involvement with the process, being conscious of his professional background with JLL. So we, part of the reason for having these separate review teams was to avoid his involvement with the selection process. There were times at Economic Development Commission meetings where he would leave the dais when it was being discussed so that he wouldn't even be tempted to discuss or advocate for JLL or anything like that. So he abstained at the meeting earlier this month and disclosed his role with JLL at that time. As part of that conversation with the Economic Development Commission, the commission had asked staff to consult with our village attorney on the matter at hand, the idea that there could potentially be a conflict of interest, and Attorney Molina did prepare an opinion on that, on this question that's been shared with the village board.
What division of JLL does Walter Walfelt work with?
He's on the retail team. I forget the exact name of it. I should have prepared that, but it is a completely different division from the work that responded to this RFP.
How big is JLL?
Sorry.
It's a very
big is JAL?
They have 103,000 people worldwide, and they did $20.8 billion in revenues last year.
If I can answer, Walter Wolfelt's title is the Managing Director of Retail Corporate Services and Midwest Retail Lead.
Thanks, Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Jessica. Are there any other questions on the process piece of it?
No, Bill, this is our time to, yeah, no worries. I mean, if you'd like, you know, you can always ask questions next week. Give me so take good notes. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. So then just have a couple points here on what's part of the contract that was part of the Village Board packet and will be back before the board in a few weeks here. With the idea in mind that the sales price may not be, we're not seeking the highest sales price. We worked with JLL to kind of focus on what would be a flat fee if the project were to be below market value. So we negotiated that $100,000 comes out closely to 5% of the most recent appraisal of the property that we've gotten.
Matt, can you just speak up a bit?
Oh,
it's hard to hear you.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Really sotto voce.
I'll just repeat it again. So the $100,000 fee was reached by discussing with JLL, kind of that's effectively 5% of the appraised value of the Madison Street properties. Because when I mentioned earlier that in the case that the Village Board wants to, as part of the redevelopment agreement, have a lower sales price than what would the market value, wanted to protect that with JLL. And point out that this is specific to the Village-owned Madison Street properties, the three parcels, 7612 through 7620 Madison Street, then the two former residences on Ashland and Lathrop.
Okay.
And then I think that is all I have.
I have a few questions.
Sure.
Have we hired a broker or agent before?
I believe so. This was several years ago. I don't remember.
Yes, we did for, I can answer that, Katie. I know you don't look at me, but someday you will. We did it for the Lake and Park development, probably back in 2015. And I can't recall who we used. For some reason, it slipped my mind, but we could find that out. Yes.
And what kind of process did we go through then?
Similar, what I can recall, similar, where we chose the broker, and then the broker went out to the market to get different developers. And I think we, you remember that, Bob, because you were on
in
the EDC?
In 2017, when I was on the EDC, okay. We did put out an RFP, and we got like one person responded to it,
right.
And then no further action was taken on it.
Is that a different instance than what Kathy was just referring to?
I think it may be because I know when I was on in 2017, we did that right after Tom Hazinski left. And I was the chair. We put an RFP out. We got one person, and then the Village Board took no action.
What was that for Park and Lake?
I know it was for that for sure. And I don't believe that Madison Street was included at the time.
No. Yeah. Madison, we didn't even know about Madison.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because what year did we buy Lutheran Services?
I think that was like 17.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are you both talking about the same situation? So you're saying 2017, you're saying 2015?
15 when Tom was on the EDC. Tom, right. Roughly.
The time frame.
Yeah.
Okay. And so we didn't go through a broker then.
The original one that was the right, I recall that when Tom was the EDC, I thought it was a broker. I don't know. I have to go back to my notes.
I don't think we ever got that far with
okay.
it. And then we just threw the sign up and we were having the village staff field phone calls on it.
Okay.
So it sounds like the village hasn't used a broker in the past.
Not within.
Well, let's find that out for sure, for sure. Yeah. So, Matt, could you look
yep,
that up?
Yep,
we will. That's a good question.
Look that up. Recall. I know that there were several attempts with the Lake and Park site. There were different strategies.
Yeah.
There were three or four different strategies that the village used, and I think one of those was a broker. But
was a broker.
We'll collect that information.
Okay. It was, but I'm not quite sure if we went through it all because some of the issues with the, again, what it was it going to be? Rentals, condos?
On that, somewhat related, another strategy that had been used in the past was just using this RFP process for an actual developer to come in and do what the village would like to see. That right. was done with Lake and Park in the past, and we also had a similar request for expression for interest for Madison Street that was done in 2020, and there was no responses for that to that request for interest.
All right.
Yeah, but you're talking about developers, and I'm talking about brokers or agents.
Correct. Yep.
Okay, just to clarify. Yep. Okay, thanks. Then also, how did the neighborhood dialogues impact the selection of the broker?
It did not affect the selection or the decision between which broker to go with, but I will say that wanted to have the neighborhood dialogue series to get kind of feedback from residents. Felt it would be disingenuous to be to already have a broker go out and market the site before having the additional conversations with residents. So that's why there's some months lapsed in that process. But I think as part of the neighborhood dialogues, there were a lot of residents want an understanding about what the market factors are out there, and they are curious what developers want to do at the property. And I think that by bringing on a broker, we can kind of answer both of those requests or ideas. Some third party expert that's in the real estate field to kind of state what the market conditions are out there, and also to kind of scrutinize any proposals that would come through to determine if they're viable or realistic. I think that it's in line with a lot of the comments or ideas that came through those neighborhood dialogues.
So did the neighborhood dialogues mainly impact the timing of the hiring of the broker? Because you wanted to finish the neighborhood dialogues first before we went through the broker evaluation process, but that didn't really.
Well, I would say the broker evaluation took place before, right at the beginning of the neighborhood dialogue. We just didn't bring the firm forward for recommendation and negotiating the contract.
You just sort of waited until the neighborhood dialogues were finished.
Correct.
I see.
Because there's any of the proposals had a certain amount of time that they would be having the exclusive listing. And I didn't want to kind of use that time up until after we kind of completed that process.
Got it. Thanks. Also, can we get a copy of your deck from tonight?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. I think
that would be helpful. And that, because it has the evaluation, it has a lot of information in it. And also, is there additional information that was received by the three finalists? Did they present decks also in the virtual or in any part of the process?
No, they submitted their proposals, their documents, and then we just kind of went through it. So it was not a no additional presentation, just kind of, I guess there was a presentation, but didn't necessarily have a slide deck or anything with it. So yes, we asked, to explain the proposal, explain what their marketing strategies were, and they would just converse like that.
So all we have from the five who responded to the RFP is their response to the RFP. And then for the three finalists, there were virtual interviews that correct. Were live discussions, but
exactly
no right. additional material.
Correct.
Okay. And one last question. When you said that Commissioner Walfeld left the table for the discussions, did he leave the room or just leave the table?
He just left the table. I believe I was not at the meeting, but that's my understanding.
Okay. I've got a question. Hey, Bob, is the liaison to EDC, do you recall if you asked for updates along the way?
I did not.
You did not? No. Okay. Matt, do you remember if we gave any updates along the way?
Oh, yes. So we did provide updates at regular Economic Development Commission meetings, but we were careful to not be specific about the different firms that provided proposals so as to avoid that. So we had updates about what the process was.
So publicly,
correct,
you gave this information and it was in the minutes or so-called in the minutes that identified your updates basically as much as you could give.
Correct. Yeah, they were generally brought.
And how many times would you say you did that?
Five times, probably maybe more.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is pretty straightforward. Any other questions? Rez or Lisa or anybody else? Ken? Okay. Real good. Well, very good. I appreciate. Oh, I'm sorry, Erica. I didn't see you.
I just have just a point of clarification. So, Trustee Brennan, I'm just going to say what I just want to make sure, like, restate kind of where we netted with regard to the timeline, if that's okay with you, because I just want to make sure that I understand it. Mm-hmm. But my understanding is the time in between the RFP and the community dialogues, the reason why between the RFP and selecting and now contracting is due to the fact that we wanted to basically have those dialogues done before we actually engaged anybody in the process. And the dialogues did not or would not or have, like you tell us, provide any information that would have changed our decision.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for clarifying your understanding of that. I asked that because I listened to the EDC audio, the audio from the last EDC meeting, mm-hmm. and I recall that it was said that the broker hiring was impacted by neighborhood dialogues. So I was curious as to what part of the neighborhood dialogues impacted the hiring of the broker.
It was just that timing issue. It wasn't necessarily impacting the hiring and selecting which firm. It was just wanted to...
Just the timing.
Exactly right.
Thanks.
That's actually makes sense. And I remember you actually, I think, discussing it at this table, if I recall, because we were asking, I think, I don't know why, but you don't remember that? Okay.
Don't recall.
All right. Real good. Any other? Yeah, Erica.
So I did want to mention that I know Jones Lang LaSalle very well. I used to be an employee of theirs in the land group with this group in particular. In fact, I think I directly supported Tom Kirschbaum. So I know these kinds of processes really well. And part of the reason why I was asking about the RFP process is because I'm surprised that JLL would have made a bid, but like competitors of theirs or people, you know, or groups that align similarly to them, like CBRE, Cushman & Wakefield, bunch of others, we didn't see bids from or any RFPs. And so I'm not sure if we reached out to them or not. I do know that JLL does provide development services when they do advisory services like this. Often they are providing support in like what could go into a space like this to help with understanding of market value and what we can get. So they do have a good understanding of that. But a bunch of other folks do too. I am also surprised, just given my understanding of sort of the sandbox that this group plays in, if this is something that would meet their attention, given the size, it feels small for them. But yeah, I you know, credit my credentials in corporate real estate and advisory services and mergers and acquisitions to Jones Lang LaSalle and Tom Kirschbaum. So
I maybe speak to a piece of that. I know
it really should talk in. Yeah. I can't.
Sorry.
Thank you. Speak up. Yes. Thank you. I'll. It's on. She's got to speak in.
Okay.
It.
I'm sorry. So, Dan Reynolds, one of the employees that would be responsible for marketing the site, shared at the Economic Development Commission meeting that larger projects have been more of a challenge lately. So part of the appeal in this project was he described it as boutique development. And I think that might be part of the rationale for them expressing that interest. But
We're good. Thanks. All right. I think that kind of concludes our discussion. So I would then, Matt, do you have anything else you want to add? Nope. Okay. Very good. So, so we'll, with the motion to table to February 10th, I'd ask to let, go ahead.
Don't we have to vote?
Yeah, we're going to vote. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I think we got a second, motion and a second. So we're ready to vote.
Trustee Bachman.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. All right. Thank you so much on that. Some more to come. All right. So the next one is new business. This is the presentation and discussion for a 5-year capital improvement plan.
Well, one of the items in here is about upgrading the AV in this room. So hopefully that will help address this a little bit.
Or get a longer microphone. I don't know. One of the two. Or a shorter administrator.
Okay. So tonight I will be reviewing the proposed capital improvement plan that covers fiscal years 2026 through 2030. This is the introduction of the plan that was shared with the Village Board and made available on the Village website. Each year, Village staff gets together and spends a lot of time kind of thinking about what the needs are for the various departments and for the residents, what the priorities are for the Village Board, and plans out for the next 5 years. Tonight, there's no action being requested from the Village Board. We'll just be looking for feedback, general direction, if there's any other questions or things that the action of approving this will be as part of the Village budget adoption in March and April of this year. The capital improvement plan is part of the budget document. The capital improvement plan is a robust document. I think there's 180 pages or so. It details, explains each of the pieces of equipment or projects, and also shares where the funding for the various projects come from. I think if you're into that type of thing, it's a very useful document. And then, as I touch on a little bit, all the projects that are included in here are subject to approval within the budget, but then also individually by the Village Board. The capital improvement plan covers basically any capital purchase or project that's over $10,000. And I think there's only one example here that would be below Village Board spending authority. Anything else, $20,000 or above, will be subject to Village Board approval throughout the year. Within the document, there are a number of acronyms. Government loves its acronyms. And a lot of these are specific to the funding source for various projects. I think the most important pieces here, I think, are the Capital Improvement Fund, CIF, that's, and then CERF, CERF. These are projects that are dedicated for the what's described, capital equipment replacement fund. There's money set aside in the general fund each year based on calculation that our finance department will do to make sure that as we replace vehicles in the out years that we have enough funding to keep replacing equipment. Within the document, there are six general categories that we'll kind of run through, so I won't bother listing them. And then within each of those categories, there's each department has its own specific projects and purchases. The first we will discuss are buildings. This is kind of specific to the three village properties, the Public Works Garage, Pumping Station, and of course, Village Hall. And these are all the projects that are planned for fiscal year 2026. Tonight, I'll be focusing mostly on the projects that are scheduled for the next fiscal year and will be part of the fiscal year 2026 budget. And I'll touch a few projects that are planned further out, but those will be kind of highlighted as we get closer to them. I think a couple notable pieces here. The emergency generator, the Village Hall has a generator that was is as old as a renovation here at Village Hall. We get it tested yearly and it continues to pass, but it is about 30 years old at this point, or nearly 30 years old. So we want to make sure that we get our emergency generator replaced because we will rely on it if anything were to happen to the power system. Then a couple other items similar. There's a lot of things at Village Hall that haven't been touched or upgraded since the renovation back in the 90s. One of them would be the locker rooms for the police department. So there's kind of a two-year project here to upgrade the locker rooms there. And then one new piece here is a Public Works Department is interested in having a solar installation on the rooftop of the Public Works Garage. That project we will be kind of contingent on funding. There's some grant funding available out there and rebates through ComEd that we will be exploring. And
does this help at all with any certifications that we're looking to get for, you know, in terms of sustainability, or does it work towards that at all?
Seth, if you can come up here.
Where's our microphone? We don't have it.
And as Seth makes his way, I want to thank Seth for all his work in kind of compiling the CIP. Obviously, the staff was all involved and ready to answer any specific questions on items, but we'll hand over to Seth.
An on-site solar installation on village property is one of the prerequisites for the SolSmart Platinum designation. So we're currently at silver. We need to do some permitting changes as well, a few community engagement things, but platinum is the highest level. So yeah, that would be one of those prerequisites.
Thanks, Seth.
Okay, are there any other questions on buildings and improvements? Okay. Mm-hmm. Moving on to vehicles. Kind of run through this quickly. This is each department has a few vehicles that are up for replacement this year. Most of these items will discuss the idea of replacing with an electric vehicle. We've already hit the police department, thanks to the village board approving that purchase a few meetings ago. We'll introduce our first electric vehicle to the village fleet. And where appropriate, the staff is seeking out electric vehicles. There's still some challenges with electric vehicles on some of our heavier duty equipment or frontline vehicles for police. But there are some kind of more support staff vehicles that I think are better fit for electric vehicles, including this is vehicle that our fire marshal will use to perform inspections and respond to fires. Um, And then for fiscal year 26, we have two frontline police vehicles that are due for replacement.
So, Matt, before you go on, so I read an article, I guess it was a week or so ago, about the Michigan State Police and kind of their work with EVs. Are we ready to dive into this with both feet or replace all of them? Or are we taking a cautious approach?
Cautious approach. The vehicle that was purchased or approved by the village board will be on specific kind of traffic missions. It's not a frontline vehicle. I think we definitely want to see how it works. We also want to be conscious of having enough charging capacity and ports for that. So no, it is not our intention to move quickly on that.
We don't get cold weather here.
Yeah.
My gas powered car didn't start last week. So I guess. Then Public Works, we have one item scheduled for replacement. This is our lift truck. That's one of our, I think, most recognizable piece of the fleet. We are a Tree City USA, and we rely on this vehicle for a lot of our tree maintenance and taking down decorations and things like that. So this has been deferred in the past because it has worked well, but the maintenance costs are kind of growing, and we want to make sure that we don't get caught without having our lift truck.
Okay.
Then equipment. This is kind of a broad category for a lot of the different things that we do here. Most of these are for the police department and public works department.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. It's the same list here, but couple things to bring attention to: our sewer televising system. That is a camera system that Public Works Department will use to investigate the condition of our sewer lines. We've been having some issues with our camera system in recent years, so that is a pretty significant purchase cost wise. But it's a we use it all the time in Public Works Department to investigate our infrastructure. We have a dedicated section for information technology IT projects. So, on here, this fortunately, with our new IT consultant that was on board last year, we've caught up with a lot of projects. And this year, happy to report that it's a little less money being spent on purchases to get us where we need to be. But still, there's a few items that are required. So a couple things. Including community room audio system upgrades, upgrades to our Windows software and telephone upgrade. We've had some periods this year where our phone system at Village Hall was failing, dropping calls and the like, and we had to work through our different providers for that. Again, that our whole phone system has kind of exceeded its useful life, so we want to make sure that we upgrade that so that we can communicate with the public.
Okay. Yep.
Moving on to our streets, the next two sections are our infrastructure. So our streets and then our water and sewer system each have their own categories in here, and this is where a lot of the sizable yearly projects that we do are housed in this part of the plan. So a lot of these projects are annual programs that the Public Works Department will execute to maintain the condition of our streets. One thing I want to highlight here is the our sidewalk curb and gutter program. We've taken steps within the last few years to be really aggressive in upgrading our sidewalk inventory. There was our engineering technician Bill Koklanis has walked every sidewalk square in town, grading the various condition of the sidewalks. I think it's is in line with our goals to make our town walkable and accessible. So we managed to we've created an 8-year program where we will upgrade all the sidewalks across River Forest. And then also with some grant funding, we were able to upgrade a lot of the ADA compliant intersection with the ramps and the that will help for those that are disabled.
Matt.
Yep.
Go ahead, Russ.
No, I was just going to ask, what is the cycle of the sidewalk and curb throughout the village? I know you do a little at a time. What would you say? Is it a 5-year cycle to get through the whole village, or is it longer? I'm just trying to get an idea.
4-year cycle.
It's a 4-year cycle and you get through it.
4-year cycle, but given like Matt described, because of how many things that we have, we might be stuck in one area, but then we're getting to half and then doing the second half. But generally, it's a 4-year cycle, but we're trying to be aggressive with addressing all the concerns that we have.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Sorry, do you want to repeat that into the mic so that?
Yeah. Somehow we don't have our microphone. I don't know. Do we lose it? Don't worry about it. And he'll come to it.
Thanks. Okay.
As Matt described, Bill did a very good job of walking the entire village and finding, you know, deficiencies and discrepancies just that we have throughout the village. Generally, we have a 4-year cycle. We have the map distributed in such a way, but given where we're at in terms of making sure we address these concerns, there might be a situation where we're not necessarily getting through our typical zone one. We might be doing half of zone one and then moving to the second half of zone one and then being able to get throughout. And then as Matt described in terms of the ADA curb ramps, those were very significant because those allow us to reach our goal of just making sure every intersection is ADA accessible, handicap accessible. So with slopes, grades, and all that.
Thank you.
Why don't you just stay there until, unless there's other questions on the infrastructure. Thanks, Jan.
When we describe the street system overview, we say 31.6 miles of centerline streets. What does centerline mean? Because for me, when I think about them, like, is that excluding like the little sidewalks that come off of the curb to like the main kind of sidewalk? Like, what does centerline mean?
So centerline means because there's a difference, right? Lane miles is like lanes, car lanes. Center line means the center of the street, so both lanes of traffic.
Okay. So that does not necessarily, so like we have got much more sidewalk than 31.6 miles because we've got sidewalks on both sides of a lot of streets and other kind of type of sidewalk that comes. Okay. Thanks.
And then this is the list of the streets that are due for resurfacing in fiscal year 26. This is based on evaluation that we do of the condition of roads throughout town. And these are have been it's been determined that these are the stretches of road that need to be replaced this year. And then the Harlem Avenue Bridge Viaduct, this is the this is a grant-funded project that we have a intergovernmental agreement with Oak Park and Forest Park to complete the Phase 1 engineering study. So that's the expected cost for fiscal year 26. The first half of that should be spent in this fiscal year 25. Mm-hmm. Then a couple more high profile projects here, traffic control installations. You may remember the village board approved a resolution for the village to pursue ITEP funding to make traffic safety improvements to Washington Boulevard. That was one of the primary problem areas with that were mentioned in the village-wide traffic study. So this includes some of the engineering costs that will be associated with that. We expect to hear about that grant in the spring. And then we also have some included some money here for the design of potential improvements to address some problem areas along Lake Street. This has been kind of a hot topic, and Trustee Bachner has asked that the village look into making improvements along this corridor. So this includes some of the engineering costs for those projects, and we'll be looking to have a presentation for the village board to discuss kind of our holistic view of traffic safety at upcoming meeting, where we can kind of delve a little further into what we are picturing for that. North Avenue streetscape enhancements. This is the project that another intergovernmental agreement we have with the Village of Elmwood Park to upgrade the streetscape along North Avenue. This the phase two engineering for that project. That project has been grant funds have been appropriated for this project, and Elmwood Park and us are trying to make sure that that money will be kind of released so that we can see the project through. We did also apply with Elmwood Park as the lead agency to, for ITEP funding for that project as well. EV charging station. This was the project that was just approved by the village board a few meetings ago. And then the Displains River Trail, that's some additional engineering costs or our share of the phase two engineering design for the Displains River bike trail, multi-use trail.
Matt, it's not really Thatcher to Harlem for that, is it? Aren't we talking North Avenue to Madison? Down
that
Thatcher?
That is correct, yes. That is a mix up there.
For the Displains River Trail project.
Correct, yes. And then the last category for the CIP is our water and sewer costs. Similar to the street section, a lot of these projects are annual maintenance projects that to kind of improve or maintain the quality condition of our system. We have some money included in there for engineering design for stormwater improvements. You may remember that the village authorized engineering study for village-wide stormwater improvements, and Jack has been working with the consultant, Christopher Burke, to finalize the recommendations from that project. And the intent with this money is to help kind of the conceptual and the early stage design. Because these projects are so significant in scale and cost, we will need to have partners, most likely MWRD, to help bring those into reality. So we want to make sure that we are we have plans ready to go out and kind of seek out that funding.
Yep. So here I'm going to speak up here because this is probably our number one should be, if it isn't, number one subject that we should be really thinking about. With the catastrophic events in North Carolina and in Florida and other places where we've seen issues that happen and were never considered, we did a stormwater master plan, which was presented to this village board several years ago. And in it, there's some significant costs. And significant projects that we, the board, need to really consider. And I realize that they're very, very large and that they're very, very expensive. But I don't want it to go on deaf ears. I think it is our responsibility, this village board's responsibility, to take a hard look at that plan and find ways in which we could chisel at it and actually get some of this completed. And I'm prepared to roll up my sleeves, talk to the state legislators, whatever we need to find money, find low interest loans, find forgivable loans, find whatever we need to take this big chunk of this. It's clear in that master plan that the middle of our town is at risk. And I'm here to tell you, I take that responsibility real serious. So I am going to spend a lot of time on this, and I hope my colleagues would do the same, to find money to fund this this project, or at least a piece of the project.
But this doesn't include the lead pipe piece.
This has nothing to do with lead. Right. This is the stormwater.
So that's money we need on top of what you're talking
about. That's a different issue.
Right.
Question becomes,
but it's expensive.
It's expensive, and it's mandated for not till 17 years. And frankly, don't even know if it will continue to be mandated. We don't know. I mean, what the state will do. We know what, at the federal level will do. But at the state level, they may extend it. They may ignore it. We don't know. But at the end of the day, we have a program already placed. It's called 50-50 program that we encourage our residents to take advantage of if they want to replace their lead pipes. So we are funding that piece. But your question is, should we continue to fund it at a greater level so we can meet it at 17 years?
No. My point is that in addition to this money, there's more money that's going to be needed down the road if, in fact, we have to do that.
If we are mandated to do it. Yeah, no disagreement. But question is do we want to fund it? Mm-hmm. And at that time, if it's mandated, I think the state, or we would hope the state would have some forgivable loans or low interest loans that we could seek. I can't imagine they continue to give us unfunded mandates, which I know they do anyway, but that one's a big unfunded mandate. So we do have to keep our eye on it. I'm not going to disagree with you, Bob, but this is a bigger one that I think we have to keep our eye on. And I like us to figure out a way that we could take a shot at, how do we peel that onion back?
When we're talking about the stormwater master plan as well,
yep.
I remember that conversation. And I remember at the time too, recommending that that almost didn't even go far enough. And you talking about the disasters, I think we were talking about like 10-year floods, 20-year floods. We really need to be thinking about 100-year floods, because that's really, we've had a couple of those in recent years, where we had FEMA come out to support not just the middle of the entire town and larger Western suburban community. So, even as far as what we have in the master plan, I think we really need to consider, does it go far enough?
Not disagreeing with you. And I think the job that Burke did in terms of identifying the risk areas, it's pretty clear. So, there's no solution tonight, but I just want to make sure we don't lose sight of what we need to do. And so somehow we have to circle back on that. And maybe it's a separate conversation and a separate, at a board meeting, but a separate conversation. So.
Let me just jump ahead. We were talking a little bit about the lead service replacement. As President Ducey mentioned, we have had a subsidy program in place for several years now. We've, been seeing a lot of interest from residents, and we encourage our residents to continue taking advantage of that program to kind of help get our numbers down and also improve the their own water lines.
Mm-hmm.
Staff is very closely watching, monitoring the updates as it relates to lead service. It's been kind of constantly changing how much what the funding sources are. Originally, the hope was that the forgivable loans would be provided to municipalities, but that has since been effectively taken away, it is a costly project. Currently, as it stands, the any village in Illinois will have 17 years to replace all their lead service lines, beginning with 2027. That is when our final inventory is due. So we have some money in here to help with submitting our yearly inventory. that will help kind of know what we're up against for the long-term replacement program. But every time that we have residents take part in the subsidy program, we kind of tick away at that list. And we'll also be addressing lead service projects on a project-specific basis when we are replacing our outdated water mains.
Yeah, for us. And we're going to constantly communicate to the residents to say this 50-50 program is there. We really want them to take advantage of it. I think the village is doing everything we can to meet that unfunded mandate by the state. So.
Then, yes, the water main replacement here. We had a water study, a water system study analysis that identified stretches of water main throughout the village that need to be replaced. The village received a grant for infrastructure improvements, and we felt that this was a good place to use it because it is a costly project. So this $175,000 is the engineering design for the installation of water mains along Franklin Avenue on the south end of town. And can you touch on kind of our plan for the design and kind of scheduling out those types of improvements?
Yep. So in 2018, the village completed a system model, an entire system model. And from that model, it recommended certain projects to be completed to address pressure issues, age of the main, size of the main, things like that. And as part of that, that model identified Franklin Avenue. It identified Madison. And what we're trying to do with this water main replacement design is we're trying to get the most bang for our buck. So we're doing a couple locations of design, get them all together because there's a economies of scale to get the engineers out, get the survey all at once, bring that all in, and then we can one by one put them out to bid and space them out over a couple years. So that's the idea, is that once we go out for survey design, we'll get that all in, and then we'll just one by one send them on out to the street. And at the same time, these locations actually worked out very well in that we have a good amount of lead in that part of town. So it actually worked out that we'll be able to kill two birds with one stone while we're out there. We'll be able to do different things so that hopefully also we'll be able to tick down on our inventory.
I think that's it for the water sewer projects. And then last couple of slides here are just kind of a conclusion of the purpose of doing the five-year plan is so that we can, you know, make sure that we have funding available for projects over the next 5 years. And that's what is there before you. And that's broken down by the different funding source in the budget. And then there are several items that had been scheduled for replacement in fiscal year 26, but thanks to our maintenance program and trying to be conscious of the costs, these items are all being recommended for deferral further out in the plan. And same with equipment. And the document will spell out the deferral history if there's been projects that have been scheduled in the past and haven't been done, or it'll also call out when projects are scheduled or purchases are scheduled. And then just kind of a just general catch-all that village staff will continue to kind of review the priorities that come up. There might be emergencies or things that come up that the village will need to consider. Fortunately, there's still some supply chain issues with a lot of these purchases. Fire department vehicle that the village board approved several months ago. We're not expecting to see until the very end of 2027. So that will have to be updated in our plan. A lot of these kind of specialty vehicles, it takes a long time for them to be designed and delivered. So that's something that we are monitoring as well, especially, you know, a lot of the information technology, just making sure that we're conscious of not waiting till the last minute to replace things and, you know, coming to the village board, explaining that we might need to purchase things ahead of time and hope that there's support for us to do it. And that's been the case with several of our vehicles and other purchases over the past couple of years. And then, as I described at the beginning, not necessarily looking for a vote or anything. If there's questions or comments or concerns, please share them with me, and we can incorporate or address those as we finalize our proposed budget for fiscal year 2026. When we get to presenting the proposed budget in a few months, we will make sure to point out anything that has changed in the capital improvement plan. If there's new items that have come up or more accurate costs or things like that, we'll make sure to spell that out for the village board. And then at that time, it will be incorporated into the budget for village board review and approval. And are there any other questions?
I've got a couple questions. Maybe I should have asked these earlier when you were at these points, but one is about the firing range that needs some work. And I remember talking about the firing range in the past and how we were looking to ask other municipalities if they wanted to lease some of our space so that we could make better use of our range. I'm wondering where that stands, and also if we're comparing the cost of maintaining our own range with leasing space at another and letting our range go.
I'm not aware of those conversations.
I can answer that. Sure. It's probably before your time, but we did have conversations with looking to not only combine the firing range, but to move the firing range outside of here. We had preliminary conversations with Triton College, because Triton College has a fairly robust, significant public safety curriculum.
Degree.
Thanks. We went so far, but we, unfortunately, trying to get a bunch of municipalities together to agree to any kind of cost sharing got bogged down in a lot of other issues. So it didn't go anywhere, although I still think that's a good idea. But the cost of just building it new versus updating what we had just was exceeded a lot more than we thought. So
my question was, are we continuing to look at the other options and compare the costs to make sure that we're not just, you know, staying with what we have without comparing it to, you know, what could be a maybe less convenient to have our own firing range, but maybe it would be a better situation for the village?
Yeah, I mean, it's good. Like I said, Jim, maybe you've got a more update on.
Sure. Yeah. No. Process. Great question. I think the big thing we were looking at was this very large training center that Triton was going to put together using all the communities within the Triton district. It fell apart once the cost started breaking down. Who would supervise it? What agencies, based on how large they were, would be able to use it? And that project fell apart. As far as bringing in other agencies here, because we're a two-lane range, most of the agencies around here have much larger ranges. At one point, we actually had a 8 or 9 lane range in our old station. So that really didn't. We still have agencies that come by periodically last minute to use it, which is another example of why we don't. Because if we have an officer who comes back from training and is supposed to test fire his weapon, let's say we'd have to send him out to College of DuPage to try to get him to fire his weapon before he can go on duty. We also looked at the overtime costs. We don't have the staffing to really have enough people working the street and send people out. We do so much under the Safety Act, under state mandate. We have so much different types of training we have to do on the range quarterly. Last time we ran the numbers, just regarding the overtime, travel, wear and tear on the vehicles, specific ammo recommendations by these ranges, that it'd be an insurmountable cost to the village and not cost neutral, not an effective way. Plus the liability point. I think we also spoke to Irma at one time. Being able to have her own range and make sure up to date and on schedule with all the training recommended and mandated by the state of Illinois, we'd be putting ourselves at risk also. Are we always looking for options? Our range is pretty much run at a very low cost compared to other agencies that have ranges of 2 to 3 lane. Plus, we're mission ready at any given time. We also have the ability to invite out vendors to do demos on site, which other agencies come out and participate in. But the systems that we have here, we have so many different systems, and the range just isn't used for lethal weapons. They're also used for our less lethal systems. And so it kind of entail a lot more and a lot more investment within the budget to support going somewhere else and finding a partner where we wouldn't, as River Forest, get the range time between 3 and 5 a.m. 2 days a week. Yeah. But I do recall fully the research that was done and the request by the board to look into those options. The request here on the board is the ventilation system. We got to make sure we're staying up with the OSHA standards. We also have to make sure our officers don't get sick. Lead is evil. and all the other contaminants that are put in ammunition too. So I think we're trying to keep our officers safe and healthy and well.
And how often are we using the range?
Almost every day. Once again, all three shifts have really a pretty strict regiment of training they do quarterly. And to get each shift through those quarterly trials means that someone's on the range shooting every day. And remember, it's not the old days where the officers would come on and they'd fight or shoot their six-shot revolver and maybe a shotgun. There's probably 15 different weapon systems that they have to train and keep up accreditation for. And that's also part of the less lethal systems that we use here, because we don't just want to have to rely on lethal systems out there when dealing with the public.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Like I said, we tried different ideas. We thought the Triton one was kind of an interesting, but that was cost prohibitive. And like you said, that when you started putting all the municipalities together, it just kind of conflicted a lot. So if anybody on the table around here has another idea, or I guess you're all here.
I think we're always open.
Always open.
And if you guys hear of anything, please let us know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks for that. My other question was about the potential of putting rooftop solar at the public works garage. And I was curious. I'd never seen it. Realized that if we do that, we can lower or eliminate the franchise fee that we're, as residents, we're all paying for the cost of electricity at the public works garage.
So the intention of the project, we reached out to a couple people to get an idea of how this solar would work, what rebates were out there, what was available to us. The presentations that they made, the estimate that's there, and I think there was even a nice little diagram there of what would be the footprint on the public works garage. That would equal us based on, we actually grabbed the energy consumption over the whole year, and that would get us to net zero in terms of electricity pull
at the public works garage. And by doing that, then I didn't know that we could lower the franchise fee. I thought that was just a negotiated contract. I didn't realize that we could
get over your stuff. Yeah, here we go.
Yeah, thank
you. No, you are correct. So the franchise fee, it's got about an 18-month lag, but it basically seeks to cover the cost of electricity use here at the public works garage. I believe the library is also covered under the franchise fee, and then the stoplights, not the streetlights. The streetlights are one of our paid electric accounts along with our pump station, but the rest of those, the electrical cost is paid over time, using residents, franchise fees that are added onto their ComEd bill every month. So yeah, by making one of these facilities net zero, that would there would be some delay into when that savings would be realized. But yes, it would lower the franchise fee.
That's great. I didn't know that was possible. Thank you.
All right. I think that concludes all the questions around this table. So thank you, Matt and team and staff. I know how difficult and a lot of work it is. So on behalf of the Village Board and myself, thank you for all that work.
Actually, I have one more question.
Yeah, go
ahead. I'm sorry. It's late. But it has to do with, I know that we really, really work hard for as much as this as we can. And when does it do we have somebody on staff, please refresh my memory, that does grants for us, or this is on top of the day job?
You're looking at all of them.
Right. When do we reach a critical point where we might want to have somebody that does like that is literally looking for grants all day, every day?
I think you guys question. Are getting I think we've been fortunate and successful in acquiring a grant. So I think that helps kind of push that off. But I think that's definitely something worth considering. There's consultants and things that will do that type of work as well. So that's something we can
especially
explore.
As we start peeling back the stormwater management separation. That's a big nut, and it's only going to get costlier. It's not going to go down. So we have to realize that. So, okay. Thanks. All right. So I think that concludes the discussion of our capital improvement plan. I think we have no executive session, right? So we're going to adjourn. So if I can get
a motion to adjourn. Okay.
Second.
All righty. Thank you. Very good.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
President Adusi.
Yes.
Meeting adjourned.